I will be reading a passage from Pynchon's novel Vineland, pages 89 to 91. "I'll try to cash this down at gate 7," she told him, "quick as I can." She got out into deep sunset, airport traffic in the distance, downtown beginning to cast a glow, and in flashes motor pool Cutlass Supreme, headed for the small community known as Gate 7, which had grown up over the years at the edge of a giant invisible base beyond. According to signs along the ancient freeway system, which ran through towering halls of concrete, echoing, full of shadows, there were at least 100 of these gates, each intended to admit or reject a different category of visitor. But nobody knew for sure exactly how many there were. While some stood in isolation, hard to drive to, heavily protected, seldom used, others, like Gate 7, had generated around themselves service areas, homes, and shopping plazas. The Gate 7 Quick Liquor and Deli, hunkering down among the off-and-on ramps of its exit, was jammed. It was Friday, and a shift had just ended. The parking lot was a zoo, so Farnese had to park along the frontage strip near an unlit street lamp. Inside the place, men and women in uniforms, civvies, suits, party outfits, and work clothes milled and clamored, holding six-packs in their teeth, balancing children and monster-sized snack bags, reading magazines and tabloids, all, it seemed, looking to get checks cashed. Farnese queued up under the fluorescent lights, in air conditioning heavy with car exhaust, and could just make out, at the far end of the line, two part-time high school girls, one ringing up purchases, one bagging. Neither, when she got there half an hour later, was authorized to cash her check. "Where's the manager?" "I'm the acting manager." "This is a government check. Look, you do this all the time. You cash checks from the base, right?" "Yeah, but this here's no base check." "They're in the federal building downtown. Their phone number's right on the check. You can call them up." "After office hours, ma'am." "Yes, sir. Can I help you?" The line behind Farnese had grown longer and less patient. She looked at the girl, a smug mouth, a bad attitude. She wanted to say, "Kid, better watch that shit." But she was about the same age as Prairie would be, working at this checkout for maybe for the rest of her life. And with Farnese's days of federal empowerment and one phone call conflict resolution years behind her and fading fast, she was no longer in any position to throw her weight around. Humiliated, helpless, she came out sweating into the grayly overborne night, traffic smell, not enough streetlight, in the air a distant unlocalized rumbling from somewhere deep in the base. She drove on downtown, being extra careful because she felt like doing harm to somebody, found a liquor store with big checks cash sign, got the same turn down inside. Running on nerves and anger, she kept on till she reached the next supermarket, and this time she was told to wait while somebody went in back and made a phone call. It was there, gazing down a long aisle of frozen food, out past the checkout stands and into the terminal black glow of the front windows, that she found herself entering a moment of undeniable clairvoyance, rare in her life but recognized. She understood that the Reaganomic X-Blades were swinging everywhere, that she and Flash were no longer exempt, might easily be abandoned already to the upper world and any unfinished business in it that might now resume, as if they'd been kept safe in some time-free zone all these years, but now, at the unreadable whim of something in power, must re-enter the clockwork of cause and effect. Someplace there would be a real axe, or something just as painful. Jasonic, blade to metal final. But at the distance she, Flash, and Justin had by now been brought to, it would all be done with keys on alphanumeric keyboards that stood for weightless, invisible chains of electronic presence or absence. If patterns of ones and zeros were like patterns of human lives and deaths, if everything about an individual could be represented in a computer record by a long string of ones and zeros, then what kind of creature would be represented by a long string of lives and deaths? It would have to be up one level at least, an angel, a minor god, something in a UFO. It would take 8 human lives and deaths just to form one character in this being's name. Its complete dossier might take up a considerable piece of the history of the world. We are digits in God's computer. She not so much thought as hummed to herself to a sort of standard gospel tune. And the only thing we're good for, to be dead or to be living, is the only thing he sees. What we cry, what we contend for, in our world of toil and blood, it all lies beneath the notice of the hacker we call God. The night manager came back holding the check as he might a used disposable diaper. They stopped payment on this. The banks are closed, how'd they do that? He spent his work life here explaining reality to the herds of computer illiterate who crowded in and out of the store. The computer, he began gently once again, never has to sleep or even go take a break. It's like it's open 24 hours a day.